Comedian Mo Ahmer's family fled war in Palestine in the 1940s, and then they had to do it again when the war in Kuwait happened in the 90s. They eventually settled in a suburb of Houston as refugees. The comedian has turned his personal story into a new Netflix series. It's called Mo. This is Up First Sunday. I'm Rachel Martin, and today we're thinking about the experiences of refugees living in limbo as asylum seekers in the U.S. In the show, Ahmer manages to mix the tragedy of his family's situation with moments of lightness and humor because, after all, he's a comedian and that's what he does. Here's an example. This is a flashback from his first day of school in America.
Clap. This is Mo Hammond. His family is from Iraq. He just flew in from the Gulf War.
My family's from Palestine, actually, but I was born in Kuwait.
Okay, class, let's welcome Mohammed from Pakistan.
Palestine.
Mo talked about the series with my colleague Layla Fadl. He says there was lots to explore in his family's 20-year journey through the American asylum experience.
It speaks to, like, second-generation or statelessness, right? And the ripple effect that happens from being stateless and displaced. It's one of those things, like, once you're waiting for your asylum to be granted, and most people don't even know what asylum is. So you come to the States, you file for asylum, meaning that you fled for war, political asylum. There's many reasons why you can file that way. In my case, it was because war and political asylum. And I can't even, like, during that process, you're not even allowed to go to your home country of Palestine because of many reasons, but you're not even allowed to go back. So meaning, like, you're just out there stateless, no home, on paper, and all a person like that wants is to feel like he belongs, and they feel like they're seen, and they feel they're equal to their other human counterparts. And it constantly feels like you're less than whenever you're in that process.
And that was a decades-long experience for you in real life, right?
20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, 20 years.
Your namesake character, Palestinian American, English, Arabic, Spanish speaking, Mohammed Najad. He goes by Mo. Sounds a lot like you. How much of this character, this family, this neighborhood is you, your family, your neighborhood?
Well, the neighborhood, I could say for sure that it's 100% where I grew up, and it was a big part of, you know, pitching the show, that I had to film it in Houston, in the suburb of Houston called Alief. Alief is one of the most diverse neighborhoods in America. 80 languages spoken there. It's incredible. And been an exporter of phenomenal artists for many years, and I never felt like it's ever gotten its flowers appropriately.
It does feel like Houston's a character of the show.
It is, and that was very much on purpose. And even when I was describing the show to potential director of photographies and directors, I would just explain to them, like, I wanted this to be like an urban Western, you know, like Houston or Texas in particular has these amazing skies and clouds that are really rich from the Gulf and really bright and strong. And I wanted that to come through in the show itself, stylistically. And I feel like we did do that. It was just so much fun bringing that to life. As far as the characters, definitely, like, rooted in my DNA and definitely autobiographical, but it's all really grounded in my experience in America, my immigration process, working on the table, having to provide for the family.
Yeah.
You know, just everything is there.
I do want to break down some of the, you talking about your immigration process specifically, and your Palestinian roots and that decades-long fight for asylum in the U.S. is really at the center of this series. It's a storyline of anxiety and injustice. And there's this moment in episode one when your character's girlfriend, Maria, played by Teresa Ruiz, and your best friend, played by local rapper Toby Nwegwe, they're worried about you going to jail for hawking knockoff luxury goods. I want to just listen to this clip.
Bro, chill. Nobody's going to jail.
They gonna send you back to Palestine first.
I never been to Palestine. I don't have citizenship there. I don't have citizenship here. I'm like a refugee free agent. I don't even have a passport.
I'm like a refugee free agent. So this is, yes, a comedy, but it's also a tragedy. I mean, your main character is held back by the fact that he doesn't have papers and he can't just choose where he's going to work no matter what his talents are. Your girlfriend, Maria, saddled with debt because of the situation she grew up in. And in a different situation, you both would probably be killing it.
Right, exactly. And it's that's probably like the tragic part of the whole story is that while you're waiting for your asylum to be granted, a lot of family dynamics change. I mean, you got to think about it. Imagine my mother at her age from when she was waiting to be a, you know, American citizen. It took 21 years for her. She's into her 60s at that point, right?
And, yeah.
And to not have the ability to see her family, to check in with them, to see them in person and not allowed to travel at all. It's tragic. It's heartbreaking. You know, it almost like forces you to be illegal, to do illegal things while you're trying to be an upstanding citizen.
Right.
It's like it forces you in a situation. The system itself is built for you to work under the table. And I guess that's what builds nations, right? Is these lower rates of having like basically free labor, essentially. When somebody is in a corner and has to work under the table, they're forced to take whatever that employer is willing to pay them.
And that's very clear in the show where you have to either work somewhere where people will look the other way. You're at one point hawking these sort of knockoff Chanel bags and Rolexes. And is that something you did in real life too?
No comment. Yes. No, I did do that. Okay. I did.
Let's just illegal activity.
Oh, it's been the statute of limitations, I believe, has already passed.
Okay, let's talk
totally
about
fine.
It then.
No, I did do that. It was an accident. I used to go to the wholesale district and, you know, with my father before he passed. And I saw these glasses and it had the Versace logo. I was like, oh, these are really cool. So I put them on and I loved them and I bought them. And next thing you know, somebody from the neighborhood was like, man, these glasses are amazing. I was like, yeah, they're cool. You're like, you selling those? And in that moment, I was like, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm selling them. I was 14.
You were 14? Wow.
Yeah.
A born salesman.
I was 14 years old.
You know, there's this push and pull with your character of adhering to the traditions of being Palestinian, being Arab, being Muslim, and following that path, but also being from Houston. And like into hip hop and like doing all these under the table jobs. And maybe you don't tell your mom you're DJing at the strip club, you know?
That moment was hilarious. Yeah.
There's this moment though. My favorite moment is when you are shot and your mom is like looking urgently for the bullet wound. And then she finds something else. I want to play that clip here.
Oh my God. Oh my God. What is that? A tattoo, Muhammad?
I got shot and you're focused on the tattoo, Shumali.
A graze will heal, but a tattoo is a disgrace on your life forever.
I related to this. I've never been shot, but this would definitely happen in my
house. Me either. Hopefully never happens.
But it made me laugh because she's in the situation worried about your life and then she sees a tattoo.
Hysterical. Classic Arab mom, for sure, 100%. For my mom to be so calm in a moment where her son has been injured by a bullet.
Yeah.
And then you realize like what she's been through.
That's right.
For her to be that stable in that moment and to be that sharp and focused. And then to say like, it's only a graze, you know, it just tells you everything about where she came from. And her faith and her understanding, like she's so, it tells you so much. And that like 1 minute tells you so much about that character is that it's like, she's a believer, understands not to mark your body and what that does, came from war, has seen death, believes in God, faithful, believing woman, strong. Like it's so much just in that 30 seconds, right? So I love that scene so much.
There are a few scenes like that where you say so much in such a short time. Another one that I think of is a moment in episode 1. Your character's just been shot in the arm. He's confused. And the ambulance crew is telling him what just happened.
You were in a mass shooting. You're in shock. Definitely require medical attention.
No hospitals, okay?
Actually, it's not a mass shooting. Only 3 people got shot, and it takes 2 people to bring mass.
Yeah, but the shooter also got shot. That's 4 people. So, yeah, it's a mass.
No, the shooter doesn't count.
I'm refusing medical attention. I'm uninsured. I'm not paying $5,000 for an ambulance ride.
I found that so revealing. Like, in what, 22 seconds is exactly what this clip is.
Incredible.
You're talking about broken immigration system, a broken healthcare system, a crisis of gun violence so acute that you've got medics arguing over what is and isn't a mass shooting. I mean, can you just talk to me about how you packed all these layers into these moments?
First of all, I'm so relieved that you get it so quickly. Like, I'm pinching myself now. Like, man, we did that in like 20 seconds. That's pretty awesome. Because it's something we need to talk about, like the immigration system, of course, but the healthcare system, and of course, the gun violence in America.
Right.
I mean, I'm doing really, really well. I went to Signature Care and I got a bill for $18,000. I'm like, how? We just did an IV drip and an x-ray. Like, how do regular people even able to, like, take care of this? And why am I being billed this much? It's infuriating. So it was really important to, like, make as much social commentary as possible, but also in the framing where we don't get lost in the story and it's really grounded from an immigrant side, but also very universal. How we did it? Time.
Yeah, I mean, there is a real, I mean, these are not easy topics, right? But there is this sort of subtlety. It's weaved into life in all of these different characters' lives. And then you talked about how Houston is such a central part of the show. And you've got your clique, right? Your girlfriend, Mexican-American, mm-hmm. your best friend, Nigerian-American, in this suburb of Houston. You know, I just want to talk about that. I mean, because it's not just your immigrant experience, but the immigrant experience for a lot of people in different ways.
It is. No, it's what Houston is. So I think that having any other characters in the show would be disrespectful and not really accurate to what the experience is in Houston.
Yeah.
And that's just tip of the iceberg. When you have 80 languages spoken in A-Leaf, like, my God, we're doing our best that we can to have a, you know, such a diverse cast, and it's something I'm really proud of. So yeah, it's something that is just really important to highlight in the show and have, and to make sure that that circle group is very, you know, true to how I grew up.
Olive Oil, also central character of the show.
I mean, how can you have, you know, a Palestinian lead about a Palestinian family and not talk about olive oil? It's
right?
Impossible.
I mean, do you actually carry around a bottle of olive oil? Do you just like?
I do.
No, you do not.
I do. I travel with it. I don't carry it in my pocket all the time, but I do. Yeah. So we have an olive farm back home in Budin in Palestine, and we get deliveries every 6 months. And yeah, of course, whenever you can, za'atar and olive oil is something that makes its way with me pretty regularly. Also hot sauce. You know, I'm a hot sauce guy as well. But the olive oil is like central to a Palestinian experience. There's so many layers involved in that as well. It's like, okay, you have the olive oil. You have my mom pressing the olive oil, which is like the nurturing, the loving, the caring of the mother, trying to stay in touch with her roots while staying busy. Getting the olive trees as a plot throughout the whole show is that you have the Palestinian side of what they deal with back home of olive theft and olive trees and destruction of olive trees. You have the olive oil and how rich it is and the blessings that come with it, and also the references we have in our Quranic tradition as well in Islamic tradition. And then you also have the olive branch, the extending of peace as well. So there's a lot layered into it. We did that as much as possible in the show, but that was like a big part of the storyline.
Yeah. I mean, there is a moment where she's using it because you're not feeling well, and it's for food, and it's with love, and it's there's also this. I laughed out loud when I heard this part. So this is a clip of your mom's character in an antique store trying to buy an antique with olive oil.
Linda, I have only this.
What am I supposed to do with that?
Wait, my friend, be patient. A small piece from this, you dip it with this, and now try. You like it?
I like it. Yusra, this is the oil we should have invaded Iraq for.
It's crying. I mean, I covered Iraq for 5 years. I mean, I just died when I listened to this. But I really related to this. I remember as a kid leaving Lebanon with like a gallon of olive oil wrapped in plastic before the 3 ounce rule for the planes to bring them back olive oil for my family.
Well, yeah, so it was like illegal to bring back olive oil from West Bank to Jordan, and they would take it from you.
Yeah.
And my uncle was like, just tell them it's olive juice.
It's olive juice.
And that was really what I did. They were like, hey, you can't take olive oil. I was like, no, it's olive juice. They're like, oh, okay. And they just let me go.
So also just, part of being having a piece of home with you somewhere else.
Exactly. It's just like the olive oil is not only for the taste and the flavor and how incredibly different it is as, you know, coming from your homeland, but it's also like having that attachment always with you. Like, you open it, you have it, you think of your grandparents, you think of your lineage and ancestors. Like, it's, we take this very seriously.
Olive oil. And hummus.
And hummus, of course. What's happening with hummus across the planet is just devastating.
Well, we're going to have to play this clip.
Would you like to try some chocolate hummus?
Can you just say to me?
What?
You say chocolate hummus? You know what he just did? He just insulted my grandmother. Yeah. Your lineage. To hell with your culture.
I mean, I've had this feeling in Trader Joe's and other places many a time. Like, apple spice hummus. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, just like, I don't know what to say. I just throw my arms up in the air and just walk away. Like, I don't know what to do. There's no way to stop this thing. It's already, but the only way you can combat it is by just, you know, influencing the culture and let them know how terrible it is. Anyway.
So you said you've been
thinking.
Don't
get me started on hummus. I swear to God, it'll hijack the whole thing.
Stay with us. You're listening to Up First Sunday. More of my colleague Leila Fadel's conversation with Mo Ammer coming up after the break.
Do you think that a lot of people who don't get to see themselves usually on the screen in a series on Netflix or somewhere else, that they'll see themselves in this?
Yeah, I mean, that's not completely the intent, but also it's definitely part of it is where you can help people that have been through it that can at least have something to point to when they're being so misunderstood. I think this, when I was coming up, being from my background, there was nobody else. There was like, I was a Muhammad in Texas touring the South, like in the late 90s as a teenager.
Wow.
And then after 9/11, it was crazy. Like, nobody was doing what I was doing. It just didn't exist. And it was just such a unique experience. And I realized how big of a gap there was of understanding and culture. And then I was like, man, this is a people that were largely faceless. Mm-hmm. They, in like the modern media or Hollywood, weren't depicted as positive characters, were derogatory terms were used against them. If you watch that documentary called Real Bad Arabs, real being spelled R-E-R-W-E-L, it gives you a full-on history of how we were treated in Hollywood and how we're depicted and being completely faceless people, essentially. It's just absurd.
Yeah.
Knowing what we've contributed to society globally and culture, it's really wild to think that we're not anywhere to be seen. So to have a series like this out is monumental. It's absolutely historical. And it gives those kids that I didn't have growing up something to look to. Yeah. And also, this show is completely universal. It's not just about immigrants and this and that. It's anybody who struggles, anybody who lives paycheck to paycheck, anybody who's trying to take care of their family. Anybody that struggles in this world can relate to this series. And the significant layer is that you have a Palestinian family you can relate through, which is incredible, which is absolutely incredible.
I will say it was cool to see just like phrases like Bismillah and the prayer by the graveside in moments that are not about being a villain or just like, this is me being like, hey, you know, praying to God or thanking God in a moment that's good or bad in my life. Yeah. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Or the zephy, the wedding zephy, like just moments of joy. And zephy was cool.
Come on, it's a real zephy.
And just to explain to people, zephy is, it means applause, but it's like a wedding procession. Debki, traditional folk dance in the Levantine, specifically for Palestinians, a dance of resistance.
Yeah, I just like, man, I gotta have this in the series. How do we do it? And then I was thinking, I was like, oh, immigration, people get married for citizenship or green card status. I was like, let's use that as the tool, as the medium for that. And it was so much fun filming that.
That's so cool.
That's just so cool. And the mix of it all, too, it's like, when I was composing the music, and they would ask me, like, so what is the show about? Like, what kind of music do you think? I was like, well, that's really interesting. I'm a little bit Palestinian folk music. I'm a little bit country music, American country music. I'm a little bit hip hop. I'm a little bit chopped up, screwed up music. I'm a little bit R&B. I'm a little bit bluegrass. Like, I love bluegrass and I love jazz. Like, this is what the show should be. And they looked at me like, this is the coolest thing we've ever worked on. That's what they said. We're going to get to explore all these sounds, and it's going to be so amazing to do so. And we did that in the show.
My last question. So you've been thinking about this series for 9 years? For more?
I've been thinking about a TV show for 20, but the first time that I wrote anything of the series was about 9 years ago.
And is it what you imagined it would be?
Man, it's deeply emotional and beautiful and cathartic, and it's amazing. Like, when I showed it to my mom, it blew her away.
She's seen it.
Because I was just recreating the house from memory and some of the pictures that we had. And she was like, how did you remember this? And how did you get that? I was like, Mom, it's ingrained in my head. Like, I can't forget it.
There's a scene I can't forget of your mom, or the character that plays your mom in the show, where she's trying to boil down everything she's been through to this American lawyer.
This is reminding me of everything painful we went through. The IDF forcing us to move from Haifa to Borin, us leaving Kuwait after the Gulf War, the Iraqis breaking the front door, the Kuwaitis breaking the side door, and eventually the Americans breaking the back door. And on top of that, I have to watch my husband get in prison for false accusations and being tortured physically for it.
Yeah, I mean, that line alone is directly from my mother, my actual mother in my real life. You know? Yeah, she absolutely said that. Once your mom tells you that, like, you think about it, like, the Iraqis came in, literally broke down the front door when the Gulf War happened. Mm-hmm. And then when the Kuwaitis were given back control and the militias were being put together, they were inspecting house by house, and they came in through the side door. And then the Americans came in and they broke down her back door. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is so traumatizing. And no need to rewrite that. You know what I mean? I just, like, copy-paste. And I talked to my mom about it, and it was a moment where I had, like, these intense conversations with her that, you know, until I started making the show, she started sharing with me. I didn't know a lot of these things because, you know, I was so young that you try to protect your children as much as possible, which is understandable. And then I started discovering all these new details as I was writing the show. I would sit down with my mom and I was like, Mom, I know this might be too painful to talk about. If you don't, I completely understand, but I'd like to know for my own self, not even for the show or anything else. I want to know. I want to be educated about it. And also, just if we put it in the show, a lot of millions of people are going to relate to this, and it can empower them to better their lives. Or also people that didn't go through it can relate to it and have empathy for it. Mm. And once we had that conversation, she just opened up completely. And it was just incredible to understand the strength of this woman, but also get some better understanding about my family as well and what our experience is and what makes us who we are today.
That's Mo Ammer. He's the star and creator of the new Netflix show, Mo. Congratulations.
Thank you so much for having me.
I guess mabruk.
Barak fiki.
Thanks to Leila Fadel for sharing this interview with us. Also thanks to Phil Harrell, who produced, along with help from Justine Yan, and editing assistance from Jenny Schmidt. I'm Rachel Martin. We will be back tomorrow with all the news you need to know. For now, have a great rest of your Sunday.